Good morning, good afternoon, good everything to you. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life again this week. It's the 7th of June, 2026, and we have a beautiful source today by the wonderful Seth Godin, who normally, Justin, is brought to us by you, because I haven't spent a lot of time with Seth, and yet every time I have a source in front of me or read something of his, I think, yes, 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 yes. So thank you for bringing it. And if you're new here, the way that it goes is that we have a source that's between us, written by sometimes one of us, sometimes somebody else in the big wide world, offering their extraordinary, soulful commitments in their world into writing. And then we hold them between us, read them to one another, and see where the conversation goes. So this is entirely unplanned, unscripted, and we are in the moment with one another, seeing what emerges from our own worlds, in service of both our own development, but also the world's longing, I think, for these kinds of meaningful conversations at depth. And I've heard, Justin, in these last days, just how another layer of how supportive it is for people to have this in their lives, whether they are driving the car to somewhere, doing the school run, or on the beach, or walking the dog, or feeling unwell. This provides a kind of thread of something really important through life. So I'm really grateful to be here and to be participating in it and in some way making a contribution and ultimately building community and relationship and connection through the conversations that we have. So thank you, Justin, for keeping on, keeping on. Thank you, me. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for my family who kerfuffle out the door in order for me to be here and be present to the conversation. And it's such a sustaining, life-giving, centering practice for me to be here. So thank you.
Thank you, Lizzie. Welcome. Welcome, welcome, everyone. Just thinking, Lizzie, as you were introducing this to everyone, to say that what we're doing here is a practice that really anyone can do, that the principle is that it brings us into relationship in a new way, and it invites a kind of realness of conversation that so many of us are actually quite starved for. And it comes from lots of different spiritual traditions. You'll know, I know this from my own Jewish tradition, where there's a way of studying as a spiritual practice of taking a text and sort of making it live in between. What a thing it is for there to be you and me and Seth and Seth's words, and for us to not know, to not try to perform this for anyone. We put it out into the world, but we don't mess around with it, and we don't have a plan. It is a conversation very much that's allowed to emerge exactly as it is. And we take our time with one another, and we don't try to impress one another or rush one another, but instead to come towards one another with a really sincere and deep kind of curiosity and welcome and also contactfulness. And it's unusual, but it's actually not that hard to do. So for any of you who are listening, you can do this with people. You don't have to know someone well. It's a great way of getting to know someone well, to find a poem or something that's resonant for you and your lives and put it between you, and to do exactly this. And you can do this with us and with other people in our Turning Towards Life live offering, which is currently in the middle of its second season, but the third season starts in September. It runs for 6 months. It meets once a month. It's marvelous, marvelous, marvelous. And if you go to turningtowards.life, you will find there a way to find out about that, to sign up, to message us, to support us, to get the conversations in your inbox, to find out about the coaching programs we run. There's like a ton of things at turningtowards.life, and all the previous conversations, and this one will be in there soon as well. So here we go. Here's the source, which you can find in the show notes and in the email and all those places. So this is, as you say, Lizzie, this is by Seth Godin. So Seth is someone whose work I've been reading every day for years, because he writes every day. And you can find him if you just search for Seth's blog or Seth Godin's blog. He's wonderfully generous, thoughtful. And we have featured him four previous times in our 451 prior weeks. So he's a regular, not a regular, but he's a regular. And it's lovely to have his work back here. And this is called The Real AI. To quote the great Steve Wozniak, actual intelligence, the kind we're born with and can develop if we choose. It's worth more now than ever before. Alas, it's rarely taught in school. The difficult work of making choices, the act of curation, the responsibility of putting your name on it, the judgment to ask the right questions and skip the other ones, the imperative to ship useful work, the pursuit of good taste, the patience to sit with the right problem rather than solving the wrong one, the generosity to create for someone specific, seeking justice, offering dignity, knowing when to stop, investing in deep empathy, not a shallow substitute, taking initiative and doing the reading, being patient or impatient, depending upon what's needed, ignoring the noise, making something that matters, caring.
Thank you, Justin. The real AI, and this is Seth Godin. To quote the great Steve Wozniak, actual intelligence, the kind we're born with and can develop if we choose, it's worth more now than ever before. Alas, it's rarely taught in school. The difficult work of making choices, the act of curation, the responsibility of putting your name on it, the judgment to ask the right question and skip the other ones, the imperative to ship useful work, the pursuit of good taste, the patience to sit with the right problem rather than solving the wrong one, the generosity to create for someone specific, seeking justice, offering dignity, knowing when to stop, investing in deep empathy, not a shallow substitute, taking initiative and doing the reading, being patient or impatient, depending on what's needed, ignoring the noise, making something that matters, caring.
I'm very moved by hearing you write this, Lizzie. Hearing you read this, I mean, you didn't write this. I'm moved by Seth writing it and hearing you read it. And I think my starting point with it is I've followed it because I've got really interested in AI. There's a huge amount of attention in the world going on AI and what it might be. The terror and optimism and over-optimism and big money tied up in it and lots of vested interests and all of that. And I think that what's been on my mind a lot as I've thought about that is we humans have always built tools to help us, but we are always at the risk of confusing our tools with us and with ourselves, and in doing so thinking that we are like our tools rather than something else. So I remember reading that Freud's idea of the way the emotions work was based upon the steam engine, which was like the biggest technology at the time. And it had lots to do it, but it would be a mistake to think that we're steam engines. And more recently, we thought we're computers. And then we think, well, maybe computers are more like us than we are and all of that. So I think thinking about this is really, really important. What is it about being human that we can really find and honor and cherish and behold and amplify? That is what being human uniquely is. And there's so much to say about it. But actually, for me, the last two lines of this, making something that matters, caring, and I'm going to go up a little bit, offering dignity. There's something. No matter how clever a machine is in generating language that might even help us think through things very, very well, or in generating images or whatever it is that the things that we call AI do, there's something that humans do that is really particular to humans, which is, I think, is to do with mattering, which is that things matter to us. Life matters to us. People matter to us. What happens matters to us. And I spend a lot of time thinking about what being alive is and what being a human is. And there's lots to say about it. But one of the things that we always have is the capacity to choose what's going to matter. Like, what is worth something? What is sacred? What is precious? What deserves our care and our love? And the one thing that machines don't have, to what are we going to bring our attention? Like, where are we going to invest ourselves? And what I love about Seth's writing is that it seems to me it cuts through all that and comes back to something we actually know very, very intimately. There's not a single radical line, in one sense, in anything that's written here by Seth. They're so obviously human concerns, but they are worth saying because they're also the ones that we forget, and particularly when we get afraid and we get panicked and we go super fast everywhere we skate over the surface of things. And so I'm also relating to this piece of writing as if it's a kind of practice in self-remembering, like just reading it to one another. I'm wondering about what it is to start the day, and one can read anything, but to say, okay, so my particular kind of intelligence today, my being human, is going to involve the difficult work of making choices, the act of curation, the pursuit of good taste, seeking justice, offering dignity, knowing when to stop, ignoring the noise, making something that matters, and caring. And if I can remember that all the way through the day, I don't know, or if I can return to it when I forget, it's no guarantee that anything will work out just as I want it. But what I think it is a guarantee of is that I will end the day and start the day as a human being, not confusing myself with something else. Not a machine, not a cog in a wheel, a cog in a machine, not a human.
Mm. It's such a beautiful list, Justin, and hearing you talk about it somehow is bringing into relief for me the human things inside here. So caring, patience, initiative, empathy, discernment, knowing when to stop, dignity, justice, generosity, good taste. It's such a beautiful set of distinctions that can't be replicated in anything other than a human being. And somehow, I think this conversation really matters because it names some of the onlinesses of humanness. It's reassuring to name what we are that nothing else could be other than the humans could be. So as you say, no machine and no animal even, nothing other than humanness could be this. And I think it really speaks to me to feel the robustness of humanness in a time when it feels like it's being somehow lessened or threatened or something. And the other thing that's happening for me, Justin, inside of that, as I list those things and feel into it, is the thing that I've said 100 times here that happens, which is I suddenly don't know what things mean. So the word dignity came to me and I thought, oh dear, I've used that word 100,000 times in this moment. I don't really know what that means. And so I'm kind of taking it as an opportunity to go, okay, so what does it mean to be dignified and to be dignified by another? And it doesn't seem separate to me than this mattering thing. So in order for me to treat you in a way that has dignity in it, you have to matter to me. And I have to treat you like you matter. And you have to be, I guess, relationally left with some sense of being able to be upright and feeling like you matter to yourself. And of course, it happens on an individual level. Like, I need to be dignified myself, but you can also dignify me and then invite me to my dignity. And I'm thinking in kind of caring situations where a person has particular needs because they can't do that independently for themselves anymore, and what it means to dignify someone in that situation where they feel less capable or less able, and maybe sometimes they're not even aware. And there's a way of doing that that dignifies, and there's a way of doing that that treats someone in a way that doesn't dignify. So I'm really grateful to actually look into the word dignity in myself and see what I could find. And I'm sure there's 100,000 more things to say about dignity. But that's also a gift of being human, is that we can feel into and work something out as to our own actions and our own doings that bring about a certain relational, it's a power that we have to relate in different ways that have people experience themselves differently because of the way we acted, which again is an entirely different realm to something that's not human. Those things that are really deeply human, AI can't give birth. AI can't bury somebody or hold a funeral ceremony, although maybe it could write one, I don't know, but it couldn't hold it. And all of this articulation of our usness in a world where maybe sometimes we don't talk about that at all. And so then AI comes along and it fills a hole instead of meeting something that already knows itself. So I feel like this conversation for me is something to do with humanity, us humans knowing ourselves, so that when things come to us that are unlike ourselves, it's meeting something that's robust rather than an empty hole that needs to be filled or something.
Yeah, what a striking, astonishing thought, actually, Lizzie, that you just said, I think, which is that when we forget ourselves, when we forget what we are, then when something very powerful and compelling comes along, we might make two mistakes, it seems sort of implied by what we said. First of all, we might give over what's uniquely ours to that because we've forgotten that it's uniquely ours. And then we might confuse that with us. We might imagine that it has all of those qualities. And so an AI chatbot can offer a simulation of care. But what it can't do is care, because we humans have this unique something that's so hard to give a name to. But you kept talking about the experience of something. We have a something of us. There is a something that it's like to be Lizzie, and there's a something that it's like to be Justin. There's a something of me that is experiencing, always feeling and experiencing and having being with you, be like something. And the same thing is happening for you. You are experiencing. And in one way of thinking about what's at the heart of all of these is that they are an opportunity for us to attend to the quality of experience that each of us has. And you said a few times as you were talking before about, I noticed you said, the experience of dignity, the person experiencing themselves as dignified, you know, as cared for as or as loved or of value, that in a way, as well as all of the practical things we have to take care of, which end up being to do with experience, I want to make sure that you're warm and that you're safe and that you're not going to get hurt. And beyond that, there's something in me that experiences, which I think is the source of all dignity and is the same thing as the source of all sacredness, can reach out across space and time to you, and I can do my best to offer you the experience of dignity, or to offer you a way to feel safe, or to offer you relief from your exhaustion, or I can do all of those things because there's something that I am. Things matter. That is the primary difference. And so I'm sure it would be possible for someone to make an AI something that would conduct a funeral service. I'm sure it's possible. But that's not the same as somebody conducting a funeral and offering dignity and deep empathy and patience and having done the reading and curating and done the difficult work of making choices. And of course, any of us who've been to funerals or weddings or any of those things know that it's also possible for an actual person to lead those things as if they weren't drawing on these. You know, a person can stand there and do these incredibly important moments, which I think are no different to talking to the person behind the checkout in the supermarket, or the person who makes the coffee, or the bus driver on the bus. The question is no different. It's possible to do it on automatic, like there wasn't someone there in us or in them.
Mm.
Or it's possible to bring ourselves, imagine, I'm just imagining reaching the front of the queue in the coffee shop and thinking, how am I going to be with this person who's serving me the coffee in the light of the difficult work of making choices, what there is to say in this moment? So this person, the act of curation, taking responsibility, having good judgment to talk to this person in an appropriate way, offering dignity, knowing when to stop, investing in deep empathy. So whether it's a wedding or a funeral or a tender conversation with a friend or a conversation at work about a project that needs completing or organizing the family finances or whatever it is, we can do them more like humans or more like machines. Maybe that's why we can build machines which do things, because we've got both in us, but machines don't have that which is human. It's really hard because we're under so much pressure, so many of us, all of the time. And we get so afraid and we get so self-critical and we lose contact with ourselves. But what a world we make when we rest in the invitations that Seth is making to us and come to our interactions from that place in us, rather than from a kind of place of absence, from presence and mattering and care, rather than absence and being on automatic.
Mm. Really taken, Justin, by this thing you said about you could do any of these things on autopilot or with all of these things. And something a kind of thought is trying to coalesce in me about if we are on autopilot, if we are just acting out of shallow empathy and habitual, let's just get through this-ness. It feels like we would be more susceptible to an idea coming along and saving us or something. And it's coming to me because I got married to my husband in a Church of England church. And the vicar was, I think, one of these things of being on some kind of autopilot, to the point where, our vows did get said, but I can't really remember what they were. And, you know, they're probably just the ones that everybody knows kind of thing. And then, of course, my wonderful sister, Holly Holden, for anybody who doesn't know her, is an interfaith minister. And the kind of ways that she holds a ceremony and she does a wedding includes all of these things. And so as she does weddings with other couples, and I hear about what it's like to do that and how she, what she does and what her process is and how she holds the process of becoming that precedes standing at the altar. And then she does the ceremony with them, holds the thing. I notice that that is not what we received in our marriage. And for someone who's holding it in the way that the vicar did, and I don't mean to be mean about the vicar, by the way, like, I don't even know where he is, but he has all my good wishes. It's not like he was bad or anything. He just wasn't awake. He didn't ask us any questions about ourselves. He didn't, it was a shallow substitute, I think is what I would say. And that's born out of me knowing what my experience was of being in it and also seeing contrast and seeing what it could have been like through my sister's practice. It just shows me that there are very different ways of doing things. And maybe as that vicar, it would be easy to go onto AI and say, write me a script for a ceremony and I'll just say that. It would be easier for him to do that. My sister couldn't do that because of all of that's happened in her world and in her life that has her be all these very, very deeply human things. And maybe she'll use it to help her with something like a structure, or I don't know. I really don't know. But in terms of the dignity and the specificity and the generosity and asking the right questions and skipping the other ones and putting her name on it, and I'm feeling ignoring the noise, you know, not taking everything into account that really doesn't need to be taken account, because I know the for the sake of what, I know the reason that we're here. That discernment and that skill, human skill in relationship, I can feel how beautiful and how much that matters to the power of things, to the declarative power of a marriage, for example. And I'm feeling this conversation is making me feel really grateful for life, really grateful for the possibilities that we can cultivate these things. Like, really grateful that good taste exists. I'm not sure I've got a lot of good taste, but I know people who do, and how grateful I am when I see it. And people who have that patience to sit with the right problem rather than solving the wrong one. You know, when you're in a conversation with someone and someone asks you the question that actually needs to be asked and doesn't buy into whatever story you're running, but asks to the underneath, and you think, oh, thank God someone's asked me about the real thing, or thank God someone saw me for the thing I was struggling with really, that wasn't the story I was telling, but they were quiet enough and they were patient enough and they were kind enough, curious enough and at depth with me enough that I got to say the thing I was longing to say, and that really matters to me. All of those qualities, thank goodness. Like, my gratefulness for that in this moment is massive. And what would the world be if it was flattened to that not existing? But it does exist between all of us, and we can deepen and cultivate and get more skillful at that and become in more depth of empathy with one another, or we can hone our patience and our impatience and when which one is called for. We have the consciousness that can do that.
It seems so important. Lizzie, gosh, in everything you said, there's a whole world in all of the ways that you talked about your wedding ceremony, for example. And then towards the end, you started talking about for the sake of what? And that's the question, seems to me, that's always available, that is lies underneath everything that Seth says. Is for the sake of what am I talking to you now? Is it to look good? Is it to mark the time? Is it just because we're going to get another podcast episode out? Is it because I feel obliged? Is it all of those things are possible? And then there are deeper ones. There's these ones: seeking justice, offering dignity, pursuing good taste, making something that matters, caring about you and everyone who listens. They're different. as you just said, they're different places that we can put our attention and our intention. And that, the magic of it is, you know, when you said, you know, what if the world was just flattened, which is a risk, we make a flattened world, but we haven't yet made a completely flattened world, because this is always present for us humans. It's always, no matter whether we're just going through the, you know, if I'm the office clerk going through the motions, and I have very little choice about what I do in that moment, these choices still exist. They're still there. And if I'm the person hosting and facilitating and enacting a wedding ceremony, these choices are still here. They never go away from us. And that's miraculous. Because it means that even when we are almost on automatic, it's not over the mountains or over the sea or up in the sky for us to find our way back to these, because these are the, as Steve Wozniak said, this is the actual intelligence that we're born with.
Mm.
And we've not talked about this, but it seems like such a good place to end. We're born with it, and we can develop all of these if we choose. That's worth more now, says Seth, than ever before, but it's rarely taught. What a marvel to think that anything we do and any difficulty we face could also be an opportunity for us to develop this right in the midst of it. So I know that's what you're up to in the world, and it's what I'm up to in the world. It's also what Third Space is up to in the world. So for any of you who have found your way to turning towards life but don't yet know about what Third Space, which gave birth to this whole conversation, is up to, you can look at the coaching part on the turningtowards.life website, or you can head over to wearethirdspace.org. What a joy to be in this conversation and to feel, I think one of the many reasons I keep doing this with you, Lizzie, is that this conversation is a way back into contact with these. That's also what I get to practice and get to receive from you, is attending to this with whatever source we have in the middle between us. So it's a great privilege to do this together, and to all of you who are with us, it's a great privilege to have you around us, and I know we benefit, and then I know this ripples out, and you're very, very welcome to tell somebody else about this conversation and send them a link from your favorite podcast app, or sign them up to the email, or point them to our website, or whatever, if you think that they would benefit. And Lizzie, you and I are heading into the final part of this year's year-long professional coaching course. So next Sunday, we'll be in the thick of that. So we'll be cooking up a way to have this conversation even while we're doing that. And all being well, everyone, we will be back next week in the midst of that. And we'll be very, very glad to be in another conversation.